Rookie Fever, the show that looks closely at NFL rookie values all year long.
Let's go! Let's get this show going, man.
Hurry up, hurry up!
With your hosts, Swagzilla Zero G.
We can't all be winners.
And Mike, the Feverish Fanero.
It's never in a vacuum! Nothing is in a vacuum!
The Rookie Fever Podcast.
We're just having fun and we're working, baby. That's it,
baby. They come. Wait, wait.
Yeah, that's all I've been talking about is rookies on the 40 for like the last month.
Yeah, right? That's crazy. Yeah. For a month you've been doing that. That's crazy.
Yeah. We diverted onto the free agents, but you're right. Now we got a month of draft, and what else are you going to talk about? Right?
More rookies.
And you're just beating it to death at this point. We could new information, right? It's just even these pro days are a joke. So
yeah,
that doesn't change anything for me.
Nope.
You're getting less data on people. I mean, I think it's crazy what players are doing now with like not testing whatsoever, and you know, Marvin Harrison not even coming to the combine, and like these guys just opting totally out of certain drills.
Yeah,
we're good. Like
quarterbacks in particular, like it really feels like a mistake from a quarterback standpoint, I think. But
agreed. I mean, the whole Jaden Daniels wanted to wait to do things at the pro day to prop up his players. I go, what do you mean the two first round wide receivers? that you're going to be throwing to at your pro day? Yeah. Like, now you packed on the weight so that you looked a little heavier and you didn't want to run the 40 when you were at 200 and whatever 20 pounds. So now you're going to get back to your like 210 ish weight and then maybe you'll run at the LSU pro day.
Like, even recent memory to back me up, Bryce Young doesn't go and Stroud does. Seems like Stroud's a confident man and Bryce Young had something to hide.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I just don't know how you don't feel that way as a team. Like, you know, like clearly this year and last year, it's very tight with the quarterback. So, like, you just decide in a competition where I get to show off what I am, that's not going to be what I do. I'm going to go hide somewhere. Like, that's just, I don't know.
This is a sport. Right.
Yeah.
This is a sport.
That should be competitive spirit, right? Man. That's an opportunity. Like, I don't get it. Like, even the Xavier Worthy thing bothered me because he's fast and he shows up and he does the run twice. I think he did the 40 yard dash twice. I think he did one other drill that he knew he would kill at. And then he's like, I don't need to do the other ones. Like that, again, just feels like, okay, so you told me you're fast. That's all you told me. Like, you also told me that you're worried about showing any of your other skills off.
Yeah. I mean, he fast, we knew, right? But he wanted the record, right? That's why he after the first one, he ran.
But how many teams have bust going after just speed?
Yeah. Listen, there's a
So why would you test just speed? Like,
Yeah, because that's not going to, I don't think that moves the needle with him. I actually do like him as a receiver, but you already knew he was fast.
Some of those fast guys end up being great punt returners.
I don't know, man. It rubs me the wrong way from a personality standpoint. We can only judge, you know, with what we see on college tape and then maybe what other analysts say. But like, when you see something like that, that just shows me a player's heart. It shows me his commitment, his competitiveness, and these are all like measurables we can't put on a stat sheet.
Yeah, it was like the Roma Dunze who did every drill, and at the end he was out there doing a three cone until no one was there anymore until he could get like sub-7 seconds or whatever it was. Like, that guy's a competitor. You know what I mean? Like, that's who I want. That's who I want to draft. That's who I want in my locker room. Play player. It's like the running backs, right, where you kind of have to test if you're a running back, right, in this new world. Like, you don't get the opportunity. You don't get to decide. And Braylon Allen just does nothing, right? And I'm just like, you just think because you're 20 years old, right, you're 240 pounds, like, you're just a lock. That's not the mold of the new age running backs on. Like, you better go out there and show them you're at least fast. Right? We all know you can't change direction, so you at least better run fast in a straight line.
And again,
do it as pro day.
And again, I think if they don't do it, it's because they're not fast.
Yeah, they're tipping their hand. The things you don't do, you're not good at.
I just feel like that's what you're saying.
Yeah, if you knew you were good at it, you would do it.
Yeah,
right. That's the whole point, right? Like, if you didn't train for it, you're like Marvin Harrison, right? Where he goes, I'm not training to win these, you know, these meets. Yeah. I'm training to be a football player. All right. Yeah. I still call bullshit on that, but, you know, at least you're saying I'm not even training to try and run a 40 fast, right? Because
right.
how applicable is it in the NFL?
But, right.
You know, seems like more of a cop-out. He knows he's wide receiver one. He's top five pick. He's got nothing to gain, everything to lose if he comes out there and bombs. So business decisions, unfortunately. But, yep. You know, so less data points for us fantasy geeks to mess
with. That said, I think you know, Xavier Worthy or his agent still advised him well if he really isn't going to do, you know, if he's going to be average or below average on the other tests, because only need, like, three, maybe even one team that just is obsessed with speed, and he'll still go earlier than he would have without that record breaker. So he's good. His stock went up. It's just, for me, I wanted to like him as an all-around wide receiver, and he kind of came out and showed me that he's a little worried about that himself. I'm like, wow, if you're worried about it, I guess I'm worried about it. Like, I'm not going to move your stock up.
Yeah, the ghost of Al Davis looms large still in the NFL, right? Speed still.
It's not just him, though. I mean, it's a lot of first-round wide receivers that are drafted just for speed, and it's John Ross. Like, no, John Ross wasn't first. Who is that?
John Ross was a first-round pick.
Oh, yeah, he was first. Yeah, see, that's even hard to believe.
Henry Ruggs.
Yeah, Henry Ruggs is the one you were talking about, but I still think, like, they chase speed, so he's going to get his draft stock. I get why he was advised to do it, but...
Yeah. Yeah, listen, shit, if I'm running in the 4.2s, I'm going to be on that line as well. Yeah. But you're right, it's opting out of most of that other stuff. It's more the concern than proving your face, and we already know it. And but look at us, we're talking about...
That is the voice of Matt Walker. You know, I've been trying to find a way to, like, not have to cut this part of the show out. So I think this show just started a while ago, and that that conversation is... too good to leave to us three guys, because we'll probably forget about it anyway, so we'll keep it out there for everybody to hear. But with that said, this is Rookie Fever episode 370. I'm here as always with Feverish Fornaro.
What up
and that was an awesome conversation. I didn't even want to interject because I felt like it belonged so much. So first of all, Matt, appreciate you being here a ton.
Yeah, man.
That is at walk_FF on the Twitter sphere. The Fantasy 40 with John DeBarre. Did I get his name right? DeBarre, is that how he says it?
Close. DeBarre,
He won't be listening to this anyway. What episode are you guys on? You guys have been doing that forever.
We're not at 370. I mean, when you said that, I just was like, you blew my hair back on that one, man. And look, I don't really got much to work with, but you're making me take a quick gander at where we're at, because 370, guys, that's super impressive stuff.
Thanks.
You got to be able to
370. It's getting heavy. It's getting heavy, yeah, Matt.
It sure is.
Yeah, you're gonna have. I'm gonna have to go back and check to see where we're at from an episode perspective. We ain't at 370, guys.
So you know, we had Fornaro, three or four seasons of Rookie Fever player profiles, and we don't take those out. We keep those in our episodes. So that was like 3 to 4 episodes a week when we were doing that. So we got a good like extra 20 to 30 every season just with those. So that did it. We kind of are cheating a little bit.
Listen, but you can hear still cheating. Hear
our
when we started, we did 32 team breakdowns on the 40. All right, so I mean, if you want to pad the stats a little bit, we devolved from
that. Sounds like 32 episodes. Yeah.
Yes.
Isn't that like a podcast rite of passage to do like something on every team? We avoided it narrowly. I remember we did conferences for a little while, but team by team breakdowns is very tempting as a podcast. It's a nice.
You gotta have your sells, your buys.
It's beautiful filler, right? You're like,
it's a beautiful filler. Like
we were doing like two teams, everyone, and run you through the whole summer. It's like a beautiful thing.
But I think that it's a good filler. But I think there's also a lot of people that want to hear that, and I think sometimes we do try to get a little bit fancy out here, and we try to be some. Peacocking dudes and show our feathers a little bit. And I think sometimes like I hope we don't scare new dynasty people away sometimes with all the analytics you see, like me fighting the analytic guys, me telling people to get rid of Tank Dell like with a passion. Like I hope that they find the fun in this to where they can be in it long enough to be as pissed off as we are.
Dynasty's not for everyone, right? I've found that out time and time again, in different leagues. But we've been doing this long enough that we're passionate about it, right? And we have opinions.
Yeah, so, definitely.
So I have a platform to talk about them. Which is
and Matt, you've been doing this long enough to where you've had some rookie heartbreaks, probably, and some like probably big hits. You've probably got like a history of good and bad, like the bliss and from bliss to devastation, as we say. And that's why you're here, to talk about your rookie life and the good and bad of it.
Yeah.
So I know Finero's got some questions ready to rifle away. This show started different than I think any show I've ever done.
No, it started without us knowing.
But so we got to get away from all that information that you guys had at the beginning, because that was good stuff. But I'm out.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, listen, it's funny because you guys said we're talking more broad based, just kind of. My perspective on rookies, of course, we just dive right into players, right? And we're just pulling them apart right away. It's just, it's innate. It's part of who we are. But, I mean.
Who was the first rookie you drafted that you maybe this might be really hard to, like, not only in your rookies drafts, but maybe a rookie you were excited about in a redraft league that you were like, I have to have him.
Oh, that is a great first question, because I was ready with my heartbreak question. And
nobody's been asked this question either. I just thought of it,
and I'm starting to look back and say, when did I start playing fantasy football?
So I was
it's probably talking about like 20. I've been playing fantasy for 30 years now.
It's hard to think of a rookie that you went at like that long ago, because I don't think rookies were as relevant until, like, rookies are the new sleepers. Like, rookies are the guys people are looking for to find that guy that nobody's going after for a little bit cheaper. And now they're even like in your rookie drafts with so many of us dynasty heads, we're going after them a little bit there too. But it's a tough one.
If you get back to on who was the first rookie that really stuck out, because when I started, and much like everyone else, I assume I was all redraft. I played in redraft leagues. And then at a certain point, redraft just kind of got boring, right? Because you got to reset every year. Like, you just, there was no skin in the game, right? Like, good, bad, or indifferent. You start from scratch. And it's like, if I really like am passionate about a player, like, why not benefit from that? And then I started thinking, this dynasty thing, like, you can just keep the guys, like, especially, and when we're talking rookies here, like, you hit on a guy, that no one else knows, like, the Puka Nacua's of last year, which a lot of people were actually high on, like, going into draft season. Like, Twitter, actually, he didn't come out of nowhere, but you still were drafting him third, fourth, fifth round, depending on what time your draft was and stuff like that. Yeah. And now you have that guy on your team. Right. And there's countless examples of those type of guys. The guy that always sticks out to me kind of early in my dynasty career was Aaron Jones. And the year Aaron Jones came out, I was all over him. I was talking to DeBarry and I'm like, this is the dude. Right. And then when Jamal Williams got drafted in front of him, I was like, this is great. This is great. No one's going to draft him. Everyone's going to think this slug Jamal Williams is the one in Green Bay. And it's really the guy behind him out of UTEP that's going to be a superstar. And lo and behold, right, it took a little, it was like a war of attrition, right? Mike McCarthy didn't want to let it happen, but, we wore him down over time, where you finally got there and you realize, like, the fifth round pick in that draft, and Jamal Williams, I think, was the fourth round pick in that same draft, was the preferred option on the same team. Like, not just in a draft, like, they were drafted to the same team. And Aaron Jones, who still valuable to this day, who I think will have a good year in Minnesota, if things break right, there's really nothing else there, right, other than Ty Chandler. So he still has staying power, six, seven years later?
Yeah,
and his career, which isn't given.
You almost forget how late he was drafted. And you know he wasn't a first or second round guy, but you almost forget. Like, you know Williams was drafted before him, but you just don't think that late for Aaron Jones. At least I don't. He's been pretty much, except that first year, he's been pretty studly.
Yeah. Yeah, just a super dynamic player. Like, I even went back, kind of like doing a little history before this, and realized that in that same draft, the Packers even prioritized D'Angelo Yancey over Aaron Jones between the Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones pick. So they had a pick earlier in the fifth where they said D'Angelo Yancey kid. And then if Aaron Jones is still sitting there at 182 overall, we'll take a flyer on the second round.
Just like teams get fooled by that all the time. Have you ever been fooled by rookie fever?
Yeah.
So have you ever gotten caught? Yeah, Clyde Edwards.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire. No.
Yeah.
He was my running back 5 pre-draft.
Okay.
In that year, moved him all the way up to 2. Right. Yep. Kansas City, end of the first round. Patrick Mahomes making the call. I want this guy. When I watched, I wasn't enamored by him. That offense was unbelievable with all those players. And then everyone talks about like his pass catching ability and all this type of stuff. And like, if you really look at it, he was catching just a ton of dump offs while Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson and Terrace Marshall were running all over the field. He actually didn't do much as a pass catcher. He was a compiler in that season. But sure as you know what, he goes to Kansas City. I'm like, deck is cleared. This guy's going to be a superstar, right? Nope. So, and granted, I mean, has DeAndre Swift been amazing? No, but he's been good. He's been better than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Cam Akers, injured. J.K. Dobbins, injured. That same class, still better options in limited sample sizes, in my opinion. And C.H. has been, who's been largely healthy, you know, on a superstar team for the entirety of his career. That was a huge, you know, rookie fever moment for me, where I just said, never again, right? I pay enough attention to these players. You know, I evaluate. And I can't let landing spot dictate that much of a swing for me. I just can't anymore. And,
I'm finally starting to try to buy some Clyde Edwards-Helaire, guys. I mean,
you shouldn't have to buy him. He should be on your waiver wire. He's just add him. He's just a waiver ad at this point. I mean,
you know,
he had like a run. Dabari, it's funny. He came up on a recent 40, and John mentioned something like his rookie year. He was like a mid-range RB2, and I was like, was he really?
Yeah,
he was his rookie year, and then he just kind of nosedived, you know, after that, where he even did enough that rookie year to be like, okay, we might have something here, right? Like, but year 2 CEH?
Had some health issues, though. I forget what it was, but he had some health issues, and he ended up losing a ton of weight, and he couldn't play.
So he did have some other season. I think I think it was after that rookie, that offseason, that he had something, like he had like some surgery, and he lost a ton of weight and couldn't practice.
So we'll see. Like you said, he's free now. So
he's still free because he's not been, the team hasn't decided that he needs to be on their team in the NFL at this point in time. So, he's one. I mean, I think he's a sore thumb for a lot of the fantasy community, because I think we all took that one hook, line, and sinker. And then, I don't know about you guys, I ended up overcorrecting after that, which, you know, maybe not after that. Sky Moore, I got Sky Moored real quick, a little bit too. And then I said, enough is enough. I'm not, just because Kansas City drafts a guy, I'm not going to take the cheese. And then Rashee Rice goes there, who was a guy I was like lukewarm on, and I have a few shares here and there, but I was like, I'm not going to prop him up because he went to Kansas City. And now he's finally looks like the one that's actually going to pan out for the team. So it's like the fool me once, you know, shame on you.
Was probably the same on Rice. I did end up with like a share, but I think it was just one that slipped to me in the right spot. It wasn't anybody that I'm not going to pretend I was high on him throughout our rookie draft processes or anything like that. I had the same concerns at that point as well.
Yeah, the irony is, very undeveloped player, but the Kansas City, that was finally the guy they actually made do with his skill set. Like, they almost like acquiesced. Like, okay, you can only do so many things, but we kind of need wide receivers, so we'll work with what you got.
I think the CEH effect kind of had a ripple effect years later, right? So like, we bumped up, and I'll say the community bumped up Sky Moore. That happened, but it was not to the likes of CEH. Like, CEH was ridiculous. He was like RB1, I think, in dynasty rankings before he was even, you know, on your you know, on your dynasty team, because it was like immediately after the draft, like everybody went bonkers. And then Sky Moore still went way higher than he should have gone, but it was probably around. Rashee Rice, same thing. Maybe it was a round and a half. Now we get to, you know, this year, and I think we, like you had said, I think we kind of learned our lesson. Like, it's at this point, it's like, I'm not going to chase that anymore.
Did we?
Oh, yeah. It's still out there, dude.
I mean, hopefully, because the reality is they need pass catchers still.
Yeah, they do.
This is a deep wide receiver class. So they're going to draft a wide receiver at some point. It could be like a day three guy that, given this class, you might say, oh, yeah.
How do you guys feel about, so somebody has their dynasty rankings, to be clear, just dynasty wide receiver top 10, and three of them are rookies. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I haven't done rankings in quite some time, and I'm glad that I haven't, because to try and project the value of these guys, one, before they're even on a team, and two, before you actually see them produce in the NFL, it's a lot of wish casting.
Yeah.
Right. We all might believe this is like a historic type class and that the top three are worthy of being dynasty wide receiver ones. But we also know that is unlikely to happen. Right. Yep. And at the end of the day, that all three of these guys are going to fire. Right?
Right.
So it's sometimes it's just a race to be first. Right. To say, oh, I have Luka Dunze in my top 12. Right.
Because there's only one in the top 10 from last year, and it's not Jordan Addison or JSN.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the guy that went in, what, the fifth or sixth round of the NFL draft. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's the JSN who was the bulletproof prospect, right? He was the guy. And now he's a little buried, right? They kept Tyler Lockett around. DK's not going anywhere. They're not throwing it 40 times in Seattle. I mean, they just had Mike McDonald go there. They might throw it less than they did with Pete Carroll, for goodness sake. So what's Jackson Smith and Jigba going to do for the next 2 years?
Yeah, I think Lockett's mastered the slide better than any quarterback out there, so he's going to be there.
As long as he wants.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's absolutely what's going on. I feel the same exact way. I think any rankings that come in and put people that aren't even on an NFL team into those rankings are just projecting too far into the future, because JSN's the litmus test, right? Like, I would say he was consensus number one wide receiver last year, like pretty easily. And his value has dropped fairly significantly after year one. And you can call that whatever you want to call it. You could call it landing spot. You could call it his rookie year / landing spot. You could call it the team he's on and the amount of passes they have in the season. You could call it all of it. But that's the point, right? Like, you don't know any of those things about three rookies who just graduated college and are going to the NFL. We don't know what team they're going to go on.
I mean, I think really you hit the nail on the head. I'd like to see where those dynasty rankers had JSN last year at this time. Did they have him? They probably had him as a wide receiver one.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the move, right?
Although, and now he's like,
wide receiver 24.
JSN. Oh, yeah. JSN before he was on a team, absolutely. Yeah. JSN on a team, probably not. But JSN off a team, 100%.
Exactly. At this point, like Swag's the same, right? Three guys are already dynasty wide receiver ones. Don't even have a landing spot yet, right? So JSN this time last year, everyone was like, this kid is complete. You know, all those Ohio State Buckeyes saying this was the guy when we were all there hyping him up. We were all just like, climbing over each other for JSN. And then in Seattle drafts him, and the air just came out of the balloon, you know.
And I think that there's one thing that we don't talk about, too, that has nothing to do with fantasy or football. Well, but in the end, it does, but is the money to be made as long as everybody, as many people as possible, are excited about this draft class. Like, you want people to tune in. You want advertisements. Like, even like the Malik Willis draft class, when there were five quarterbacks and three or four were going to go in the first round. That wasn't just our community that was talking that way. That was the world was hyping up that quarterback class to a point that at some point they had to know that wasn't the way shit was going down. They had to know that, like, coaches were starting to be like, maybe not even one. And then it ended up being Kenny Pickett was the only one even drafted in the first round. And we see how that worked out now, too. But I think there's it's like there's a lot going on, man. There's You want, they have to fool us into believing to be there. They're not just going to be like, worst draft class. Not saying it's the worst draft class ever, but they're not going to tell us how bad a draft class is, because that would, everybody's just like, eh, probably won't go to the worst draft class ever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and this is still a quarterback driven league. So knowing that there's not a QB worth a damn in an entire draft class, right? I mean, Pickett, if he didn't play for Pitt, you know, where he was just pretty much in the Steelers locker room for the entirety of his career there. He's not going to Pittsburgh either in the first round. We would have had a draft without a quarterback taken in the first round. That's insane. You know,
and it's a Swags's point if the NFL, given the value. It's a Swags's point. If the NFL knew that, it doesn't really profit them to tell everyone.
Oh, no.
They it doesn't profit them in any way.
Yeah, how great Malik Willis is to, like, you know, old ladies on the street at the combine, and you know, how Sam Howell's a leader, and you know, there's guys in this class, right? Like, don't sleep on Desmond Ridder, right? He was a winner at Cincinnati. Like, we're dynasty guys. Like, I don't see it, right?
Nobody even cared that Zach Wilson was sleeping with other dudes' wives. It was all gravy.
I mean, I think that boosted his draft stock. To be honest with you, I mean, it just made him cooler, right? It's this dude can throw 80-yard bombs and bang people's bombs. I mean, it's easily
that joke will never get old. That one. What do I don't think we've ever waited this long to ask the question that's at the top of my show sheet. What do rookies mean to you? The most open-ended question you'll be asked tonight. What do they mean to you? We've gotten answers across the board from all different kinds of people, because I don't even know what that question means to you. What do rookies mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, rookies are opportunity to me, and it's whether it's the perception of a rookie. I mean, listen, what we were just talking about, there's three wide receivers that are already dynasty wide receiver ones. Other people are looking at that. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's just there's more novice players that are just like, I need to get these guys. Right. They're a commodity. Right. I mean, they're likely at their peak when they're on your team before they ever play a snap. Right. Because if they're good, you hold them. Right. And then you're never going to get that optimal value for them unless you thread the needle. Right. Because if they're good at, like, look at like a Breece Hall, right, who gets hurt in his rookie year. You're not trading him after his rookie year, but you saw the glimpse of the player. So now it's like, okay, well, now he's a hold, right? And then he comes back and has a great year on a shitty Jets team the next year. And you're like, okay, now I'm only in year two of this process with this guy. So it's like, am I rolling clock on him, or am I going to hold this guy? But the rookie asset itself, you know, it's just an opportunity, whether it's an opportunity on my team or it's an opportunity to upgrade. Upgrade my team. You know, it's really a matter of how I feel about the player, right? Like, everyone has a cost. Like, I'm not opposed to trading any player, pick, rookie, anything before I've even seen it happen. You know, it's a matter of team by team analysis. But to me, you know, these rookies are just, are you a win now team? Are you a rebuilding team? I mean, there's a different lens of how I view them. You know, if I'm win now, I could care less about rookies. Right, I'll move all my picks, you know, for proven talent, you know, just to be competitive. If I'm rebuilding, then sure, I'm going to start stockpiling picks so I can move around in drafts and start trying to find my guys, right? Because just more bites at the apple. We're you know, no matter how good we think we are at this, you know, we're going to swing and miss just as much as the NFL does, right? So just more opportunities to get rookies on your roster, to hope they pan out where you're getting them as cheap as you're going to get them. Because Caleb Williams at the 101 right now, if he is Caleb Williams in the NFL, are you using a first round pick to get this guy ever again? No, right? You're using three plus first round picks to try and pry him off of someone's roster, right? Once Patrick Mahomes became Mahomes, who wasn't even the first quarterback in his own draft, right? Are you ever going to go get him? No, unlikely, right? The Josh Allens of the world, these type of guys. So, you know, there's just implied value, you know, of these players. And when they're young, you know, especially rookies, and once they prove it, I mean, you have a commodity on your hand. So that's just how I see them. They're an opportunity for me to go in different directions.
And I think opportunity is a great word, because I think rookie drafts provide both teams that are rebuilding and teams that are going for it opportunity, right? Because they have draft picks they can move, and they don't represent rookies to them, but they could represent a vet in the last couple of years of their contract, and that will help them win. So rookie drafts in particular, not just rookie players, just provide both sides just an amazing opportunity to juggle teams around. I think that's why they're so fun.
Yeah. I mean, listen, startups are cool, but I enjoy rookie drafts, right? I like, you know, the fresh start. I like the maneuverability associated with it. Right, I like active leagues, especially on draft day, you know, that you're moving around, you're trying to get your guys, right, and teams have a plan, you know, that they're trying to execute on. They're trying to get to certain positions to get guys moving up, moving back, you know, to get value. When you're looking at, like, tier drafting and things of that nature, that, you know, that's fun to me, right? I mean, that's just a, you know, it's akin to the NFL draft, right? Are you able to move ahead of the other team that's trying to get that same guy that you're trying to get? Is your offer strong enough, right? If you're the Vikings, are you getting up to your JJ McCarthy or not?
I love that you brought up your guy or your guys, and because Finero and I were talking about that a few episodes back, and like. So for me, like, currently, I agree with you on Caleb Williams. So this kind of excludes that 101. But currently, like, I'm fine, like, trading my first and second pick round picks today to try to make moves that'll make my dynasty teams better. But then the third and the fourth round picks, I feel like those are the ones I want to hold on to, because Finero and I were talking about it. There's always somebody that's got a guy, and and once they're there and they're ready to get their guy, that's when I want to trade my third round pick. So you can go get your guy, and I'm going to take some points out of your lineup so you can go get your guy that you think is going to be better than Tyler Lockett, or you know what I mean, or somebody like that. Because somebody's always got a guy, and the chances of your guy hitting are slim. We all know that. Like, we've all hit, and it's so fun, and that's why you want to play. Like, it's that hit, you know, like you're doing the scratch-off lotto, and you're just hoping to double up somehow. If even that. But if you really hit, like, the Pukas and Amans, like George Kittle. I remember getting George Kittle late in a rookie draft before. Like, those dudes, like, when you really get them late, that feels amazing. But that's when I'm trading. I want to hold my third and fourth round picks, is what I'm saying, unless I know I can move up a little bit. And I want to use those as much as I can to just manipulate you. I want to give you your guy. I want to give you your guy.
Yeah, I love that, because, you know, especially too, we were talking about kind of like those early players, right? At this point, like, those picks, and I heard this on another podcast I was listening, they have names at this point, right? The 101.
You know who
they're coming to get, right?
Yeah,
you know,
and like you said, with, like, they might already be at peak value. Yeah, and sure, I could wait and
half of them are.
Look at your shiny car in my parking lot a little bit longer, but I'm ready for you to drive it off the lot and handle it that way. So that's why the earlier ones, I'm willing to kind of move on from them, but the late ones I want to hold.
Yeah, and I like your process of holding to try and, you know, extract value from other teams. You know, I think that's, you know, tremendous, because you're just sitting and waiting, right? You're on the clock, and you're just,
and I know you're working all day. I know you're working all day, Matt, and you're working hard, and you're like, damn it, I missed like this whole entire rookie draft. And then you're like, oh, there's a 304 on the block, and my guy is there.
I got to get you know, in here. Like, yeah, I got to get in there.
You got to get it.
I was going to raise my hand, dude. Like, if you're in a rookie draft with me, I'm going to be your trade partner, because I will have a guy in every round, I promise, and I will probably overpay for him, I promise.
We all do.
It's just, we want to be right so freaking bad. Is there a way that you've used rookie fever against your league mates? Like, Swags just mentioned one way you could do that. Is there a way that you've used rookie fever, you know, in a draft or even before a draft, trading picks? Like, you admitted, you know, being succumbed to it, right? CEH happened to you. But is there an opportunity where you're like, wow, everyone's way too high on so-and-so, I'm out right now?
That's a much high. I'm going to go the other way on you on the low.
Yeah.
And it was even just last year's draft. It was Jahmyr Gibbs, right, in the 199. Mm. You know, right? Yep. You know, Twitter was just like, just spamming it. He's sub 200 pounds. These guys never hit. They're, you know, these case studies. I got all these proof. Never concerned me one bit. And maybe it was just a little bit ahead of the curve on him. If it wasn't for Bijan
Gibbs would have been my running back one in this class, even with nothing doing in the NFL. From what I knew from him from college to this class, he'd be by far my running back one in this class. And he was running back two with a bullet for me in last year's class. And I just didn't understand how people were so concerned over a pound. Right. And I get it. Like, ideally, he'd be 210, 215. So it was a pound. But it was really just this arbitrary threshold of 200 pounds that he didn't care to exceed coming to the combine. Right. He could have came in at 203 pounds if he really wanted to. I mean, this is what these guys do. They have trainers like, if you need to put on 5 pounds, we can do that for you. No problem. He didn't feel the need to. He said, no, I'm not that type of back. You know, I'm more of a change of pace back. And that's totally fine. And then he lands in Detroit and everyone's like, oh, David Montgomery. One, I'm not a David Montgomery guy. Two, I'm like, these guys have totally different skill sets. They don't even play the same position, in my opinion. This isn't going to hurt him at all. And then the Lions sunk premium capital into getting this guy. And they said they were even going to take him if they couldn't move back. Right? So I'm getting all these signals of, one, people are like, oh, you know, he's David Montgomery. He's not 200 pounds. Is this that? And then the Detroit Lions are like, we love this guy. Right? We have a plan for him. And I'm like, hot, listen. You don't want Jahmyr Gibbs. I want Jahmyr Gibbs. I'll take him anywhere I can get my hands on him. So it was almost the inverse where it was so many people were concerned about the weight of this player. And now weight barely matters for running backs anymore, right? I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a condition of me drafting him or not drafting him, right? It's just, you know, it's situational, you know, and it's what you feel about the player. So I got more Jahmyr Gibbs shares than I probably would have otherwise.
Love that.
Using rookie fever against him.
I'll stick with the Lions, but go the other way. And I'm the Lions fan here, but it was Sam Laporta, and it was just being bullish on young tight ends hitting because I was so into that theme last year. Just like those guys are outliers. I still believe they are actually, but because of that, I have zero Sam Laporta, and he's you can't obtain him now.
Yeah, that's a tough one, and it makes me think back to the Kyle Pitts draft, right, where this guy was a unicorn. He was going to change the position, can't miss prospect, and granted, he's been dealt kind of a shitty Desmond Ridder hand for a few years in Atlanta, so we'll see what he does with Kirk Cousins, but I have so much Pat Freiermuth because of that draft, because I didn't even look at Kyle Pitts. I mean, there was no world. I wasn't spending a first-round pick on him, but I was getting Freiermuth in the second round, who probably thus far in their careers has been the better dynasty asset through three seasons. Not that he's been a game changer, but he's been consistent, and he was a mid-second round pick.
I think his time is coming, honestly.
It feels like it.
There's opportunity. Got rid of Deontay Johnson. There's not really a lot of other pass catchers other than George Pickens there. If Russ starts games, he's going to find some opportunity. Fields use Kmet pretty often as well. So I agree with you. There's an upgrade at quarterback. Regardless of which one it ends up being at the end of the day, I think they both make starts, but it's better than Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, Mitch Trubisky that they've been dealing with for the last.
If one goes to Twitter or X to follow you after today's show at walk_FF, they will see that you claim to be the tight end guru. Since we're talking about tight 100%. Ends, and I know Swags wanted to ask this question, I'll ask it for him. Going into this past season, Swags and I were trying to remind people about the rookie tight end and what the rookie tight end can do for you. So just from a redraft, a single year one standpoint, what is your position after a Kyle Pitts breaks records, after a Sam Laporta 2 years later breaks more records? Do you feel like that is starting to change? Brock Bowers coming out this year. Or do you feel like this is just a blip? And we're going to go right back to it very, very soon. Stop drafting tight ends like they're going to do anything in year one.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch a rookie tight end in a redraft league at all. You know, Sam Laporta can happen, who landed in a tremendous situation.
Yeah.
But still, he wasn't even the top tight end drafted. That was Dalton Kincaid, who everyone was like, oh, he ended up in Buffalo. This is glorious, right?
Love that landing spot for him.
Yeah, tremendous, right? Everything fell in his favor. And where did he end up? Probably low end tight end too.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably at the end of the day, you know, not a difference maker.
A good year one for a tight end, by the way.
100%, right? Not a disappointment by any means, but Even Brock Bowers, who, yes, generational, right, is what they're saying. I mean, even Kyle Pitts, he's, what, he had 1,000 yards, but he only had like 2 touchdowns or 4 touchdowns.
Yep.
I mean,
very low.
It's quality. Yeah. He was probably not a top 5 tight end. It might be my assumption. And there's just more intricacies, even with these new age tight ends that really aren't tight ends anymore, right? I mean, Kyle Pitts isn't a tight end as much as I'm a tight end in my real life. I mean, he is a big slot receiver, yep, right? That's what Brock Bowers does. Sam LaPorta is a tight end. Sam LaPorta plays in line. Sam LaPorta plays split out. I mean, he is a more complete tight end akin to the George Kittles of the world, like Swag said. But there's guys that can get the designation, like a Darren Waller and those types who aren't tight ends, again, any more than I am, right? But can win you fantasy leagues. But early on, if that's your expectations are wrong, right? They're still probably a few years before they are going to be a consistent asset for your fantasy roster. So if it's a redraft league, I mean, I don't care where Bowers ends up, right? You're hearing some Jet speculation where you're like him with Aaron Rodgers in that offense. I'm like, you're going to have fun with them, right? At that point, I'll wait until, you know, we've kind of tiered out of all those name tight ends, and I'll go take two guys in round 10 plus that, yeah, I can promise you I'm going to be able to put together to have a better season than Brock Bowers.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And LaPorta probably like a third round rookie pick, maybe, or late second? He was somewhere in that range, right? So you had probably two tight ends go before LaPorta.
Definitely had Kincaid go before him, and then, you know, some people felt a certain like way about Mayer.
Yeah, I feel like Mayer at that,
because they were even drafted at the same kind of spot, and the Raiders really didn't have a lot, you know, in their room either. So he was given that kind of NFL ready designation.
Absolutely.
So you thought he was going to see snaps, and he really didn't early on. You know, it was LaPorta that right away, like in camp, they're like, "Oh, this is our tight." You're like, "Shit, he's Michael Mayer. He's the guy that's getting on the field right away."
But I personally wish, and I know Swags feels the same way. We both wish we owned any Sam LaPorta at this point, because you ain't getting them now.
Well, it's so hard to pay up for tight ends.
Oh yeah, dude.
For me, it's hard. I want a little bit of a deal on a tight end, to be honest with you, or even like Matt was saying, I want just a surplus of them and go back to like a redraft format, but on your dynasty teams, to where you can almost stream those tight ends and look at the matchups a little bit. And I want like the 26 to 29 year olds that are about to break out, the guys that have been in the league a little bit more. It's a position that we know is supposed to take more time. And I think, I mean, yeah, like look at Evan Engram and David Njoku. That's when it was supposed to happen. As impatient as we are, and like we want to see it quicker because we see it in some of these guys, but that's when it was supposed to happen.
Yeah, listen, Evan Engram tight end 2 and David Njoku tight end 5 last year.
Yeah.
That's who we're talking about, right? And they were guys
ages 26 to 28, freaks, somewhere in there. Yep. Yeah.
Right? But still had to figure it out. Right.
Yep.
Before they finally hit. Yeah, it's still a position that, you know, people say like a true tight end has to learn 2 different positions. You know, they're not a wide
That's
receiver.
A lot.
They're just
That's
not trying
lot.
To figure out their yep. you know, their where they're supposed to be in the formation. They have to be a, you know, in all the run game meetings, in all the pass game meetings. You know, like they're a true unicorn when they actually can be a complete tight end. Like that's what makes a Sam LaPorta super unique, because you typically don't have that natural ability to just be able to absorb all that information and be successful at executing on it. So
I wouldn't be surprised also if I'm fact checking this, but I'll keep talking. I wouldn't be surprised if Sam LaPorta is older than Kyle Pitts. Oh, wait. Sam LaPorta is 23. When is his birthday? January. So he's a young 23.
He's definitely older than Pitts, then. I think
he's January. Well, he just turned 23, right? So okay. I would say Pitts is older.
All right.
Not by much.
It's going to be close.
Not by much.
Pitts will turn 24 in October. A couple months.
He'll turn 24 in October. Yep. So,
yeah. Okay.
Porter's younger, just by a couple months.
Right, there.
And we've seen 3 years of Pitts in the NFL.
But still, like, Kyle Pitts is still so young.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, his best days are ahead of him, right? I really do think if the Achilles isn't an issue for Cousins, that entire offense is going to see a seismic shift. I mean, Drake London, who John DeBarry is not a fan of, I think, who posts a wide receiver once.
London Bridges Pitts. Falling down?
Should be a tight end 1, and Bijan could be the RB 1 when it's all said and done.
Matt, who is a rookie that you've held on to too long? You went past that unhealthy relationship and just let it die. Like, not somebody you got to use and wear out. I'm not talking about a nice career here, but...
I got two. One's a wide receiver that probably was a running back, and the other is a running back that probably wasn't a running back. So, the first is LaVisca Chenault. I was a huge fan of Chenault coming out of Colorado. And I just was like, once he gets with the right coach, they're going to figure this kid out, right? You know, they're going to give him carries. They're going to use him on sweeps. They're going to give him bubble screens. Like, they're not going to ask him to be this, like, dynamic route runner. They're just going to use his athleticism. And then Jacksonville said, no, thank you. And then they sent him off to Carolina. And then you're like, all right, well, that's not going to get any better in Carolina. But he's a guy that's kind of wild for me. But the poster child for this answer is Isaiah Spiller. I was a ridiculous Isaiah Spiller supporter. Considered the biggest blind spot I've probably ever had in Dynasty Fantasy Football. I mean, this kid had the size, had the production in the SEC as a true freshman. Then he went and shit the bed, you know, athletically, right? A terrible RAS profile. But still, land in San Diego. I think it was San Diego at the time, LA Chargers. And I'm like,
yep.
Austin Eckler's been begging not to be a running back for, yep, for years now.
Yeah.
We might be on to something. And I sat, and then Josh Kelly passed him. And then some other dude whose name I can't even remember passed him as well. And Isaiah Spiller just never fired in the NFL. And
now they signed Gus Edwards.
I probably still have some Isaiah Spiller shares somewhere.
Right? Yeah.
probably say that if the league is deep enough. But yeah, I was a sucker for Isaiah Spiller. So that's the one that stuck out to me like a sore thumb, but almost as bad was LaVisca Chenault. I mean, he was a guy I just believed in, you know, athletically, and I thought he was gonna fire eventually. So
let me ask a follow up on the Spiller, because I think this is useful information. Everybody's gonna answer it differently. But when did you let go of him? So yeah, you were all over him, right? You were like, this is your guy. He's gonna produce. But he got like railroaded by two guys that should not have been in front of him. Like, they just shouldn't have been. So the team told you right off the bat, this guy's not ready yet. However, Zamir White, right? Like, it can happen year two. So when did you let go? And was it too late?
I mean, it's definitely too late, right? Because letting go is just dropping the guy, right? So you're taking a guy I probably ended up taking.
Some value after year one.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I held him through that. You're right, because there's some guys that might take a year. It's very unlikely, but Zamir White's do happen. I do think the Raiders end up drafting a running back, so I wouldn't feel too warm cozy
about
Zamir White.
Yep.
Because they don't really have the depth. It's like him and Amir Abdul there. But
there's going to be another guy.
He's going to get the chance. Like, he is an Antonio Pierce back. Like, Pierce, yep, like Josh Jacobs, he's going to like Zamir White. The guy just runs just head first into competition, and we'll see what happens. But it was probably last year with Spiller where I finally just said, okay, you know, enough is enough. I mean, even with, you know, Austin Eckler picking up injuries, this kid can't see the field still. I'm like, why is he on the team? Why are they keeping him around? Right? Is he just like a good locker room guy? Right? Is this like his special teams prowess? Like, please cut him so that I can be done with him, right? Just tell me, you know, that this is unhealthy for me, right? Like, you guys made a mistake. It's not just me. But no, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's still on the roster now.
Yeah, the worst thing.
Finally.
Yeah, I know. The worst thing about those, especially like with a running back, because you really want to see something in year one, is if you don't see anything, which is the case with Spiller, his value goes so low that you might as well just hold on, right? Yeah. Like, that's the problem. Where a wide receiver can maintain that value, a lot of wide receivers will maintain that value past mm-hmm. year one. And we all know, because we just talked about it, tight ends certainly do, and quarterbacks, hell yeah, they will absolutely hold on to their value into year two. They're kind of known to peak at year two. But a running back, man, that didn't test well in the combine, that people were kind of ragging on before he even came the Chargers, that was a tough hold.
I have a question now for both of you.
I gotta be honest.
So do you guys think that our dynasty rosters too deep at this point to where we can just hang on to Isaiah Spiller, or that's the right option? Because you're just like, well, who am I gonna pick up anyway? I might as well just hold on to all these crappy guys.
I'm a proponent of, depending upon league size, there shouldn't just be like legitimate commodities on the waiver wire for people to pick up in a dynasty league. So whatever that means, so you 10 team, 12 team, right, 14 right. league, mm-hmm. and more, you shouldn't just be able to churn. That's the point of dynasty, right? Just to have the players, right? And draft them and hold them. So one, yeah, it shouldn't be a league where you're looking at guys that haven't been on a team in 2 years and they're still sitting at the bottom of someone's roster, right? But I don't think there should be known commodities that are sitting on your waiver wire to be added week in and week out. So I think you just have to find out what that number is, you know, based upon your league size. But owning, you know, holding 250 players ish, you know, yeah, I think is probably a good barometer, you know, for your league. So 10 teams, 25 players, 12 team leagues, 22, 23 players, whatever it equates mm-hmm. to. I think it's probably a good threshold for depth of rosters. And then you can have taxis however you see fit. I'm a one-year taxi guy. I've been playing some leagues with multi-year, and I'm just like, not really. I would prefer otherwise. Make you make a decision, right? Maybe I would have cut Isaiah Spiller a little sooner in those leagues if I actually had to elevate him from the taxi squad and rip the Band-Aid off. But I think it's meant for 1 year. I think it's meant to give you a year.
I agree.
If you're really not trying to compete, you can stash the guy for the year, so be it. But after that, I think you should have to elevate players.
And you should have to, at different times in the season, you should have to make some hard decisions. You know, like I hate leagues where, I originally hate leagues where they tell me I have to, that they're good, they've decided leagues got too many bench spots, we're going to like hack off five. I'm like, whoa. I have a tight end garden going on here. I got Isaiah Spiller over here on my taxi. I got, you know, like, what are you doing? You can't, these guys still have promise. Mm-hmm. And then you actually realize the rest of the league wants to do it. So you just do it too. And it feels great to get rid of those five players. It literally feels freaking fantastic to let go of those five players. Like, I've never had an issue cutting down.
Yeah, you're kind of bullied into it, but afterwards you're like, this is a sense of relief here because I was holding on unrealistically
too long,
to these guys because I could, right? Swags not because I should.
Swags calls them unhealthy relationships, yes. Unhealthy relationships.
And they're roster cloggers. I'll even say that if you want to make, and this is a hot take, you guys will both think this is so stupid. Unless it's a Devi league, get rid of your taxi squads. It's pointless. It's just they're there for no reason at all. Like you shouldn't need an extra year to evaluate players in a league you're trying to win. It'll make your leagues more competitive. People have to use them in their lineup. They can't. It's just silly. Add five roster spots to your bench. I don't give a shit. But you don't need a taxi squad for any reason. Where are you taking them? Nowhere. If they're on your taxi, you're just like, nope, we're gonna lose guys, but you guys can sit down here and watch. Like, come on now.
I think taxi squads,
it's a free square.
Yeah, so, I think taxi squads started mainly because of the rookie drafts themselves, right? Because you don't want to cut people to add people. But we just expand our rosters during the off season. So we just expand our rosters during the off season to 40 in a 12 teamer, which is ridiculous, right?
Just
Then you have to cut down to 25 by the time the season starts. So, like, you get a little off season, you get a little more knowledge, you get to see what they do in preseason, like all that kind of stuff, and then you gotta make your cuts.
It's a little like the NFL, right?
Yeah, I like that. I like that over the you know, let's have like eight taxi spots so I can just put as many, you know, free squares on my team as possible.
Yeah, see, the thing with me with those, and I don't disagree with you guys at all, as long as with the league construct, but then does that de-incentivize trading for draft picks and things like that? Mm-hmm. You can't taxi squad these guys where you would be more than willing to move a future third for a fourth because you want a player and, you know, stuff right. like that. Just so you can put them on their squad for a year and see if they can kind of work their way in. Do you make that trade if now it's an active roster spot? That
Matt, how many taxi spots do you want in just your dynasty, not a Devi league? How many taxi spots do you want me to give you?
However many rounds there are in the draft.
There's five. So instead, we're just going to add five players.
if we're going to increase the roster spots, still, so be it. Right? If it's still the wash, right? If now it's 30 instead of 25, then so be it. You know, because then I'm still making those decisions. Right. But if the league doesn't expand, if there's just this hard cap, and to, you know, to Finero's point, if you don't expand off-season rosters to accommodate if I want to go,
well, you know, okay, wild, so we're going to have to cut back down. Like, we can't just add five players every season.
Correct. Correct. So, right, so you're saying then once the regular season hits, I'm still making those tough calls, right?
Yeah, you're still going to have to be at no matter what our end number is here, with or without the tax season, we're still going to be at that number, whether it's 30, 35, 32. But why the taxi squad?
I like taxi squads if that's the case. So I'll hold my ground on this one. But if I play in a league where that's the rules, then so be it, right? I mean, we all play in leagues that have tons of different settings. I don't play in any that don't have taxi squads, you know, at present, because I think it's just kind of become commonplace in Dynasty. I play in leagues where there's only three taxi squads or two taxi squads.
I think we should put together Uber squads.
Like, what is that? You
know, just
I don't really know, driver. But I mean, taxis are kind of irrelevant at this point.
Oh,
so
an Uber squad. Gotcha. I see, that went totally over my head.
You weren't picking up Swag talking about, are we driving you around, when you were talking about taxis earlier?
Yeah.
I picked up on that when you were talking about it, Swag. So yeah. I'm with you. You're just
Somebody's
trying to
be a better listener.
Someone's just
well, because that's the idea of a taxi squad, right? You're carrying them.
Yeah.
To the next level, like in Devi, that's seat. Why it kind of makes sense. Yeah, like you're sitting along for the ride till I'm ready to pull you up. And then people, depending on your league settings, are pulling them on and off the taxi squad anyway. Like, weird shit's happening all the time. Like, I think it just simplifies it. But that's just...
I can make it more complicated because Uber
I know
does.
You could
Uber,
make it more...
Uber has, like, three different levels of, you know, you can do an Uber Elite, you can do an Uber Economy. Yeah. So we could have, like, three different Uber squads on our NFL teams. You like that?
I do, actually. I think that's a good idea. So maybe 15
people on my Uber
maybe
squad.
You can maybe you have to buy your taxi spot. Like, how many? Like, ooh, you have to literally pay, and it goes into league dues. And now, like, you sucking and holding those players on your taxi squad is a choice that you have, but you're actually going to pay more to do it. So the league is making more off your decision.
Listen,
you're telling them you don't even want to play for that money.
I want more players like that in my leagues. Yeah, contribute to the pot and not to the championships.
Yeah, like, I like that idea a lot, Finero. Yeah. Like, that's
let's monetize the
Uber squad. See,
yeah,
we're
like
doing
it. I like
it. Yeah, listen, hey.
It's a new format.
You're well within your rights to do that, but it's going to cost you.
No, I think that's a... I really like it a lot because, like we said, you know, now we can win more money. They're probably not trying, but it also makes you, like, really think about who you're going to be putting on your taxi squad and whether you want to pay that extra money for them or not. And I actually like that idea. I think that has promise. We'll tweak that a little.
I play in one league. It's a home league that I play in. It's a 14-team IDP league. And after the rookie draft, there is a UDFA draft. They have to pay $5 per player that you draft after that. But you'll hate this, Swag. The condition is the taxi squad, you're going to have 20 guys in your taxi squad if you want. If you want to spend all that money when you're done, you can run that taxi squad.
And another $100 on 20 flyers.
It can look like a CVS receipt when you're done. I mean, that thing can be out the door. If you're willing to pony up, you know, after the rookie draft, but that's you're going to pay for it. And then that just goes into the pot for that year.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, probably 75-80% of those guys released a year later from those two teams.
Yeah.
Because afterwards, you have to clear your whole taxi before the next year.
Yeah.
And that draft. So more than likely that those people are paying $5 for nothing.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that feels a lot. That feels
rookie
a lot
fever.
Like when you play poker and you lose your buy-in. And you can, like, buy in again. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I lost my money. I didn't have a good draft. Let me have 20 more players to make up for it.
And that's rookie fever at its height, right? You guys nailed it. It's just you're in that moment, and you're like, well, I still got this list of, like, 20 guys over here that I like. Like, and they're like,
when do waivers clear?
People don't want to wait for that. They're just firing, right? Where you probably get, you know, another 25 or 30 guys that are drafted.
Yeah, man.
In that UDFA draft every year. And I mean, it's unlikely. I can't remember, you know, in the last few years of anyone worth a damn that was taken there that actually ended up even contributing to someone's roster. But there'll be a guy that's willing to pay $50, you know, to take 10 guys when it's all said and done, and the off chance that one does hit. And I'm like, listen, I like the $50.
Yeah. Bigger pot, man. I like the bigger pot.
Yeah. Now we're talking, right? So anything to get the pot up, and allow people to dictate if they want to do it or not. Like you're saying, Swags, like, hey, you can keep guys on your taxi spot if you want, but there's a cost, right? Yeah. You decide. Yeah, is it worth it to you? Yeah. They keep them there? Sure. I'm all for it. You know?
Yeah.
Make bad
not
business
as cute
decisions.
Anymore, is it?
By me. And this is with money.
See how smart you are with all those rookies now.
Yeah, not lose it. Yeah, it changed your philosophy.
We probably shit on rookies on this more than any.
It's weird, right?
Show that does rookies.
It's not the point of it. It's definitely not the point of it.
You know, you don't see it coming, guys. I got to be honest. You know, right? Every time you're like, yeah, it happened again. Right? You're like those profitable veterans.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're talking about trade away rookie picks and what's a rookie worth and how you want to win and no taxi squads. And I mean, this is about as anti-rookie as you can possibly get.
Yeah, we sound like a bunch of like go back to redraft. Yeah,
that's what drafting Josh Rosen does to you, man.
Yeah, we're just screaming at clouds out here.
Yeah, kinda. It's venting. It's therapeutic.
I feel better.
Yeah, I feel great. Yeah,
I feel like we made the world a better place.
One episode at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finero, do you have any more questions?
No, I'm all out, Matt. Thanks so much, man. This has been a good time. I can't believe like we're this far in, like over an hour now. And
well, he has to do his draft.
Well, yeah, it definitely has to do his draft. We got one more for you, which would be, did you hear about this, by the way?
No.
Let me explain. So, we're doing best.
You almost forgot about it. Now you're asking him if he knew about it.
He didn't have to call that out. Nobody knew. Everybody knew. All right. So, best landing spot for 2024. So just think about that for a minute. Okay. Team and position. And then I'll tell you which ones are already gone. But just while I'm telling you which ones are already gone, me give you a little bit extra time because the disadvantage you have is that 7 spots are already gone. The advantage you have is that some of these suck. I won't say which ones. All right. So just think in your head, great landing spot for my wide receiver or great landing spot if a running back went here. No quarterbacks. Right. So here we go. Right. John Hogue picked Arizona wide receiver at the 101. Ooh. Michael Sipes picked Miami tight end spot. Madman picked Cleveland. Everyone says that. Watch is going to be like the best one of all. It's going to be the next Sam Laporta on Miami. Madman picked Cleveland running back. Keith Cummings picked running back Chargers, which I could see that being a 101, 102 area. John Lobb went Buffalo wide receiver. I see the temptation. Brandon had a little bit more time to think about that. That's Brandon Lejeune, Cowboys running back. Spots, maybe the current 101. Jason DiRienzo went with his Chicago team, went home for it, and went wide receiver in Chicago. And you're up.
You gotta be honest, what immediately came to mind as you were ratcheting through was Dallas running back. So on that one. And why am I even on the show with the names of those guys that you just referenced thus far? I mean,
stop.
That's a veritable who's who, and I'm clearly as
you belong.
As I talk about these people. So for me, it's going to be, and this it might be a little off the wall, Carolina Panthers wide receiver.
Ooh, wow. Daring.
There was a lot of chalk. These first was it said 7.
Yes.
I mean, it's
decent amount of chalk.
Running back. Awesome, right? Right. There's really not a lot there. Dallas running back, right? You know, he's got to be an Rico Dowdle.
Yeah.
Right. I Chicago wide receiver. I think that was said. I can't see that happening. I do like the Chargers too, but I just don't think they're going to invest in it. So, I mean, it's a matter of do I think they do it or not. I mean, Chargers are barren at the wide receiver position, and we were talking Justin Herbert when we came on. So,
if I'm truly trying to win,
then I'm going to pivot. I'm going to go Chargers wide receiver because to me, Panthers wide receiver is just because I think the room's trash. And it's old.
Are you switching officially right now, or
I'm
going to
go Chargers? I'm going to go Chargers wide receiver.
All right, nice. I like your chances with that one.
It's a slow draft. He can think a little bit while he's drafting.
Oh, yeah.
I was Dallas running back. As much as I hate Dallas, I'm bleed green. I'm Eagles diehard, but
I'm going to put Chargers wide receiver right up there with that one. To be honest,
yeah, I just think I'm a Justin Herbert believer. I'm not a Quentin Johnston believer. I do like Josh Palmer, but those guys aren't ones. I mean, I don't like Quentin Johnston at all, and I think Josh Palmer's a good like two. So if you can actually, if they stick and pick, and they end up with the Neighbors or in the Dunes,
yeah, holy shit,
man, sky's the limit. For that player.
Yeah, Isaiah Spiller play. Might even see the field.
Listen, he's a quality pass blocker and a tremendous human being. So
tremendous human being.
By all accounts.
That is awesome. Yeah. It makes you more right because he's a tremendous human being.
Listen, I'd rather be wrong about the nice guy than right about the
Yeah, exactly. The bad exactly. Guy exactly. I love it, dude.
Yeah.
Matt, anything you want to plug or talk about before we get out of this show?
No, this was fantastic, guys. I appreciate the invite on this truly unique concept. Really, just kind of Thanks. Appreciated, kind of, you know, just working around this kind of rookie landscape without being too, you know, specific about it.
Right.
It was uncomfortable, but it was enjoyable. Right?
Nice.
I just think you want to talk about players, right?
I'm just like, I love it, man. I love it.
Bring this back around. You know, can we talk about so-and-so a little bit? But no, you guys again, appreciate the time. You mentioned me on the way in, you know, me and John DeBarry over at the Fantasy 40. Me on Twitter, which I will always call Twitter. It will never be X to me as long as I'm on that app, is at @walk_FF. You know, if you want the tight end takes, you know, as, you know, Finero indicated, come find me. You know, and other than that, I'm pretty damn right most of the time as well.
So, yeah, be sure to follow him on Twitter. Shiva. Also follow at ArtBarkTV, at Rookie Fever. Oh, I had another question.
Oh, shit.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Isaiah Spiller?
I mean, Isaiah Spiller's currently on a team as far as I know. So I'm gonna continue holding that Chargers hope for Isaiah Spiller. But
We are at Rookie Fever and we are out.
Nice. Rookie Fever. When you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. In the morning, fever all through the night. Sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night. I light up when you call my name, and you know I'm gonna treat you right. Rookie fever, when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. That is something you all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago now. Who got the 101 scouting? He's never done this to before and run. I told you anyone. Size and speech just on real landing spot. Not ideal. Wait, what's his breakout? A full rookie fever stage. Romeo loved Juliet. Juliet, she felt the same. When he pulled his arms around her, he said, Julie, baby, you're my friend. I'll give a fever. When we kiss it, fever with our flame in you. Fever, I'm a fire. Fever, yeah, I burn for soon. Got the fever, cause I got the fever. Now you got the fever, so she got the fever, and he got the fever. No cure for the fever, so let's feed the fever. Thank God for the fever. Thank God for the fever.